I am delighted, and I don't say it lightly, delighted to be speaking to Neera Fimm's political analyst, John Morgan. Good morning, John, and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Donny.
Again.
Good morning, everyone.
John, we're going to discuss the wonderful topic of Brexit and where we are with it, because it is in the end game now. I mean, I know we've been 3 years talking about it, but we are getting to the stage of, this is it, isn't it really, John?
Well, we have 5 weeks to go, approximately, Donny. So, unfortunately, while there's kind of indications of certain things that are going on, there's nothing particularly concrete. We're very much still in that kind of parallel universe, kind of not knowing what's happening. So, it's a very, very strange place to be, Donny.
Now, the discussion we were going to have this morning, John, was really going to revolve around the UK government, Boris Johnson, etc. But I think the intervention yesterday of Jean-Claude Juncker has really upped the ante, where he has said that despite all the promises that we've been made, that if Britain crashes out, basically there will be a border with checkpoints.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Honestly, Donny, it's been a huge revelation. Juncker is obviously the Commission President till the 1st of November, when the new Commission takes over under Ursula von der Leyen. And to be honest, Donny, I think he's saying what the reality always was, and that is that if Britain leave with no deal and they leave the customs union and they leave, crucially, the single market, there will be border checks. Now, That really was the reality, Donny. You know, if you take the customs union, if two countries which post 31st of October no deal, Ireland and the United Kingdom, are in two different customs unions, then obviously there has to be a reconciliation somewhere. There's a little bit of flexibility, I suppose, there in terms of how Britain could set its taxes, if you know what I mean, for a short period of time at least. But the single market is the crucial piece, and only, as you know, the single market is all about 28 and now 27 countries having a common rule book around everything that moves across those borders, products, etc. You know, you could have foodstuffs, you could have medicines, etc. So we all agree that we will align ourselves to the same rules, and that obviously then allows things to move across borders with no checks. If one country then decides, well, you know what, we're going to formulate a product, different rules, different standards, etc., and we'll just transport it into your territory, there'd be no point in a single market only. So I think that was always the elephant in the room. It was always likely to happen. I think the two things really that were crucial around it was, how would you actually, inspect things which are coming from outside the single market into the single market? You know, were you going to do it in a kind of a seamless way? It's hard to know how you would do that. Do you do it away from the border? How exactly do you do it? But I suppose on the basis that the EU and Ireland didn't know exactly what Britain, and we still don't, Tony, what Britain exactly want, that was quite challenging. The one thing I would say that, you know, critical of the government, which I think, to be honest, probably most people would agree have probably done as well as they possibly could, and there's an agreement across the parties to support the government in terms of Brexit. I think the one political or one miscalculation they made was, a number of months ago, Donny, they came out and kind of said there won't be a hard border. And I can understand why they wanted to say that. You know, they didn't want to play down the prospect of a deal, and that's 6-8 months ago, whatever. And also, they didn't want to frighten people. But I think then two things happened. One, it got turned on them a little bit by the UK, who said, hang on a second, how important is this backstop? And the backstop, again, got, you know, is, Donny, you know, not wanting to bore everybody, that is an insurance policy to protect the border in the absence of definitive plans to ensure there is no hard border up there. So It was very much a case of Britain then saying, well, you know, how important could this backstop be if the Irish government are coming out and saying there will be no hard border? So obviously it's capable of being avoided. What are you talking about? So they got sort of hung up on their own petard, I suppose the word goes. But I think that was a miscalculation, knowing that, look, if there was a hard border, you would end up with some form of check. Now, you'll always work to try and make sure they're as non-disruptive as possible. One country's outside the single market and one is in it only. Look, that's, again, it's just, unfortunately, it's inevitability. So I think that's the challenge where we have now. We've 5 weeks to try and do something to avoid that. What, I don't know yet.
John, I wholeheartedly agree with you, because it was always, ever and always, a circle that could not be squared. And another part, if you'll forgive me for adding maybe to what you've given us, is the EU, Britain and America are all co-guarantors, or the United States, I suppose, is the, give me this correct term, are all co-guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement. Now, the Good Friday Agreement, unless I read it wrong, says that there can never be a border again on the island of Ireland. So how can you have Juncker coming out yesterday saying, if Britain crashes out, there will have to be a border, when the EU are co-guarantors of an international treaty that says there can't be one?
I think, well, without getting all very technical about it, I suppose, the issue really is that the Good Friday Agreement is talking about having no border infrastructure insofar as you're protecting the issues which are relevant to the Good Friday Agreement. Now, yes, we would say that includes trade, I guess. Other interpretations would say otherwise. But I think with all the best will in the world, ultimately, you've got the single market issue for the EU. That's sacrosanct. They're certainly doing absolutely everything they can to support the Irish position on the border. But I guess if Britain are determined to crash out and they have to protect the single market, well, then Ireland will have to do something to protect it. Ireland being now on, at that point, would be on the extreme edge of the European Union. And I'm afraid that's just a reality, Donny. But it's all, look, at the end of the day, it's all about then deciding how you would go about doing that. I think the EU have accepted in the very early stages, of course, there aren't going to be border checks. Nobody would expect them to be on the 1st of November. But there'll be a period of time in which, you know, like, they're going to have to get their heads together and decide how they're going to do this. If Britain crash out without no deal, you know, as Leo Varadkar says, that's not the end of the story. That's kind of day one. What do you do on day two? Britain do want to formulate a very good free trade deal with the EU. If they go to do that, and when they go to do that, don't even sit down at the table. What's going to be put in front of them as conditions for that deal? It will be all of the issues that have not been dealt with for the withdrawal agreement, being all of those issues that we're talking about now. How did they deal with citizens' rights? How did they deal with the border? So it's going to be put back on the table in front of them. So I don't really know, Donny, what is in the mind of Boris Johnson and the UK government. I guess it's a very big game of poker. The Northern Ireland backstop, it's hard to know whether that's on the table, off the table. It seems to be on one day and off the next. The other option might be that Britain feels, you know what, we're a big enough economy, we can go with a no deal, we can probably survive that for a number of months, and in that time, smaller open economies like Ireland are going to be under severe pressure and they're going to cave into something. Maybe that's their game plan. Certainly at the moment, only the word is that Britain are briefing other EU countries that Ireland will cave in before the 31st of October. They're saying things like Ireland are now starting to understand the implications for them of a no deal, which, to be honest, really is a little daft, if you don't mind me saying it. I think of all countries, we understood long before everybody else, as far as I was concerned, what it means. So this is a little bit of game playing. So again, Donny, we're very much in the dark as to how the next 5 weeks will pan out.
John, something I'm fascinated to hear your take on is the, I'll be generous, the enigma, which is Boris Johnson. Who is he playing to here, John? Is he really standing up for Britain, or is he trying to manoeuvre and orchestrate a situation where he will go to the country and the Tories will be returned as the major party in the House of Commons, and to hell with everything else, this is all about the Tories? Or, because to me, looking at him and where he has positioned himself and the way he's going about his business, he seems to have totally painted himself into a corner. And I mean, you know, we spoke, and I know you spoke with Adrienne on a number of occasions during Theresa May's tenure, but the way he's shaping up, he could have a shorter tenure again than her.
Look, anything's possible, Donny. I think anything is possible, but I think if you trace this back a little bit to the European elections, I think the Tories would have got a huge shock with the performance of the Brexit Party. I think when you look into the negotiations now, Boris Johnson, I suspect, will say, look, I'm trying to find a deal here, because the reality is the withdrawal agreement that was agreed by the British government, albeit that it's using the word anti-democratic, which I find to be very disingenuous, seeing, which is actually, I would think, quite insulting to British democracy, because it was a democratically elected government. He has not gone before the people for his premiership. Theresa May did, and she was the Prime Minister, and it was a negotiated agreement by the British government. But in any event, it didn't pass through the House of Commons, and he will likely say, you know, at the end of the day, it didn't, and I need to find a deal which will. Now, he's also, of course, signalled that he's, if not happy, he's prepared for a no deal, and now the Parliament have ruled that out, but that doesn't mean, Donny, that it can't happen. It can just, the clock can run out on them. But I think the bottom line really here is, after those EU elections, I think his consideration is, if we do not deliver Brexit in some shape or form, we being the Tory party, then we could be wiped out by the Brexit party. And I think, realistically, that's his biggest issue. So, to what you're saying, I think there's an argument that says, as much about this is about protecting the future of the Tory party than it is about doing the right thing for all the stakeholders concerned. When you look at the border, you have to remember, you know, you have to try and find an arrangement which works for the UK, which works for Ireland, and which works particularly for people both sides of the border and of both communities. But I think that's been somewhat trumped, forgive the pun, by an imperative that says we have to do something to save the Tory party future. That's a major concern for the rest of us.
And can I further put it to you, John, that, you know, while he's having an absolute nightmare of a premiership, as bad as it is, it could be a lot worse, because from what I'm seeing, looking across at the machinations in the Commons, there's absolutely no opposition. Bar maybe the Scottish National Party.
I think the Labour Party definitely, Donny, I think are in a very, very difficult situation of their own making. I think probably, I would imagine, and I'm trying to put myself in the minds of British voters, I think it's very difficult to understand where the Labour Party are coming from on Brexit. I think they're trying to ride a number of horses. You know, the official position of the front bench appears to be they are pro a second vote, but they will remain neutral on that. Now, there appears to be, you know, within the grassroots an attempt, because this is obviously their Labour Party conference time, that they are looking to try and push the Labour Party into supporting Remain in a second vote. Now, whether that second vote ever comes or not is another matter. As for Boris, yes, you know, in a difficult position, but I think for him, the Labour Party probably is a gift that keeps on giving, Donny. If you look at the recent polls, there is an indication of the Tory polling at 50.2%. That's remarkable, and that can only be down really to people's disillusionment with with the Labour Party. Boris probably also feels that he may be willing enough in an election to lose seats in the south, but get Brexit supporting votes in the northern constituency. He also, of course, has the whole issue about proroguing or suspending Parliament. You've had two cases at the moment, only one in Scotland and one in England. The courts came to two different conclusions in terms of whether one, the English court said it was lawful, the Scottish court said it isn't. It's gone to the Supreme Court now. They're supposed to be giving, or the indications are that a verdict, an outcome will come early next week. Legal commentators are saying it's likely the government will lose that vote, which will say that the reasons on which he advised the Queen to suspend the Parliament were invalid. But then again, only he could then agree, I will reopen Parliament and then go over to Buckingham Palace the same day and ask the Queen to suspend it again, making sure that I don't fall foul of the court. So it's a very, very confused picture over there at the moment, Tony.
And a confused picture at a time when we need clarity. John, get out the crystal ball there and give it a bit of a polish. Do you see them really playing poker right up to the very end and crashing out? Or do you think that there will be some, I don't know, magical interjection from somewhere that'll... Like, he has said himself, and I quote him on this, that he'd rather be found dead in a ditch than go to Europe and look for an extension.
Yeah, well, first of all, Donny, I think, you know, in the world of politics, or statesmanship at least, I think terminology like that is really, really not helpful. But that's the sort of terminology that he uses. He has a situation now, Donny, where obviously the Parliament of Britain have passed a law which states that if, when he goes to Europe for that gathering around, I think it's the 14th of October, that if he doesn't have a deal by then, that he is legally bound to write a letter to the EU stating that he's asking them for an extension, which certainly the wording, the terminology you're using that he has used, so there, that's a train crash about to happen. He's saying that he absolutely won't countenance not leaving on the 31st. So he has a very short time to get a deal. If he doesn't get a deal, he has to write this letter. What happens then? Who knows? Some people have surmised that, you know, he could resign and refuse to sign the letter, which takes away his legal obligation. All sorts of possibilities about what happens then. He could also write the letter and try to influence another EU member state. Some people have said Poland, for example, to stand up then and say, no, we are against any extension. And of course, it has to be unanimous. So he will say, well, I complied with the law and I wrote the letter, but it's been turned down and we're getting out. So honestly, Donny, you know, my crystal ball just isn't that clear to know of all the possibilities what's likely to happen. Certainly from what you hear, while the British have delivered some proposals about how you can change the backstop, and I'm feeling they were doing that simply because they were coming under so much pressure from all sides saying, how can you go for a deal when you literally have not put pen to paper in terms of what the alternatives are? I think they've gone into writing with something, but that something appears to be completely ruled out by the EU on the basis that it's completely inadequate insofar as what it does is it deals with, we will align ourselves in relation to livestock and also what's called phytosanitary issues, which is effectively plant health. So they're only two very minor pieces, Donny, of all about all of the things and all of the products and et cetera, which cross that border north and south every day. So there doesn't appear to be anything in the pipeline in terms of the deal. You know, I think the reality is no deal looks much, much more likely. Does he pull the Northern Ireland backstop out of his back pocket at the last minute and says to the DUP, look, guys, you know, we have nowhere to go here and this is all I can do to resolve the situation. I'm terribly sorry, but the greater, I suppose, good of the United Kingdom has to trump your views. And so, but honestly, Donny, I'm not sure there's anybody who could tell you what's going to happen. It's, you know, certainly beyond me now.
I think, John, we discussed it one night at a different location, where we both came to the conclusion that Boris was the type of an individual who, once the DUP had served their purpose, which they now have because of the way the numbers stack up in the House of Commons, that he would quite gladly throw them under the bus. And I think that is probably, because they have served their purpose, they're of no more benefit to him now at this stage. And I think he would quite gladly put a border down the Irish Sea and let the DUP whistle in the wind.
Well, again, you know...
And sorry, John, before you answer that, if he was to do that, would that solve everybody's problems?
I think, well, the problem really, Domi, is about agreeing a way for Britain to exit the EU. And then we sit, because you have to remember, Domi, this really is the easy part, or supposed to be the easy part, about let's agree arrangements to leave. And then we have to decide how we're going to live together going forward. That's by far and away the bigger issue. Now, the fact that we're getting bogged down for 3 years on the bit that's supposed to be the easier of the two, you know, is a concern in terms of whether it sorts out everybody's problems. But on the basis that this is such a long-running problem, a festering sore, really, in a lot of ways, I think certainly the EU and Ireland could live with a Northern Ireland-only backstop, remembering, Donny, of course, that it was only ever intended to be an insurance policy to sort everything out while this new deal, which is supposed to put much more robust and detailed arrangements around a wide range of things governing the UK's relationship with the EU going forward, I think they could live with it on the basis that, of course, that was the initial suggestion, however, many months or so ago. I think it was back in and around shortly after the 2017 election, Theresa May put the Northern Ireland backstop on the table. And of course, you remember the famous phone call from the DUP where she then had to take it off the table. So yes, I think they could live with it. I wouldn't characterise it as a solution for a problem. It's only intended to be, I guess, only a holding mechanism just to allow them to leave, and let's get on with deciding how we are all going to live together going forward. So I guess short answer, yes, they could live with it, Ireland and the EU.
John, anybody listening to you, and everybody has listened to you now for quite a while here, because they said you are our political analyst, will know from your accent that you come from the border region. Now, I spoke to you at the very inception of this way back 3 years ago, and I know that you still spend quite a lot of your time up there. And I spoke to people up there and from that area, and politicians from that area at the time. And when I say at the time, I'm talking 2016. And lest our listeners need to be reminded, we have been discussing this conundrum for the last 3 years, and we're still no closer to a solution. But my question, John, is, as somebody who really does know the temperature up there around the border area, the ordinary, we'll say for argument's sake, the shopkeeper in Ballyconnell, or the post office worker in Belturbet, places like that sitting right on the border, from day one, back in 2016, have they seen anything to give them a bit more confidence that, you know, this could be all right? Or is their attitude to it, we knew from day one what this was going to be, and here it is now on our doorstep?
I think the reality, Donny, is that people by and large up there on the border, as you say, you know, we're certainly from day one, we're not pro-Brexit. You know, whether, like, we've all been educated in terms of the technical details. So I guess it was more a kind of a general view that this is not a good development. We've all been educated in the meantime, Donny, about backstops and about all sorts of things which we neither knew or maybe were not concerned about before. But as to the other question, Donny, do they see up there anything to give them reassurance? Absolutely not. I think there's this very profound feeling of concern, of grave concern. And also, I think there is a particular annoyance and verging on anger that there would be any border checks put. I think it would be an absolute you know, people would be devastated by the thought of border checks going back, because, of course, for older people in particular, Donny, you know, border checks at the time meant something else. It meant something bound up with much darker times there. And I think that would be a huge concern, and people would be particularly upset about that. It would be very, very, very significant. I suppose maybe it's not as obvious if you're not and haven't lived along a border, all of the things that can happen, things that maybe people don't need to be that concerned about away from a border. But people, of course, all over Ireland will understand what it means. But for people in the border communities, like, it really is a really difficult time, Donny. I don't sense any, you know, any confidence that this will be sorted out. I think people, there's a collective shaking of the head up there about this is not being sorted out, and what appears to be coming down the line being border checks. I think there is particular annoyance about that, and, you know, upset that it would go back to that. So we can only hope. It surely can't be beyond the wit of man to sort this out, but I'm afraid with 5 weeks to go, you wouldn't want to be betting on anything, Donny, really.
I would be 100% in agreement with you, and I can only empathise and you know, the worry, I think, that the people in that entire border region have is more, John, more than justified. And the other thing which I think somebody would really want to be making huge noise about is that for approximately 30 odd years, one of the best trained and best equipped armies in the world were unable to seal that border. And I think, number one, Britain should be reminded of that, and number two, it's a point that should be driven home to the UK or to the EU authorities as well, because it is just it's a fallacy to say you can put up a border there and seal it. That just, we, you know, and I know, John, that is a physical impossibility.
Well, I think the reality, again, even not stating it in sort of like army terms, it's just in purely commercial terms, Donny, is that there are more border crossings, believe it or not, between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland than I understand are on the entire eastern border of the EU. Now, that's a hell of a statistic. So, again, I think in terms of trying to come up with an arrangement, to be fair, I think the Irish government and the Irish parties who are supporting the policy here, I think, are more than aware of what's happened. I spoke some time ago, Donny, to a person I know who's a former British diplomat, and I said, you know, when it came to Brexit, surely there must have been some sense about what were you going to do, where the rubber was going to hit the road, which surely had to be on the border. You know, what were the thought processes around that in 2016? And he said, John, we weren't thinking about it. So,
And John, unfortunately, time has beaten us, but it is quite obvious that they weren't thinking about it. And if you and I think back, and the listeners think back, I think it was a mere meager byline for about 10 minutes of a discussion during the entire campaign in relation to the to Brexit back in 2016. It didn't feature at all, because it was going to be so easy, as you said, to solve all this. This was going to be the easiest divorce of all times. And then we'd move on to getting an EU trade deal for Britain, which was going to be wonderful. Well, 3 years down the road, John, and neither you nor I have seen either of those things.
Indeed.
John, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I have no doubt we will be talking about this again, probably very, very early November, I would imagine. But as you and I know, when it comes to Brexit, the whole thing could change by 1 o'clock today, because it is a very fluid situation. John Morgan, political analyst with Near FM. Thank you so much for joining me, John.
All the best, Tony, and to the listeners. Goodbye.
God bless. Thank you again, John.